the ever-expanding world of children's books and the role that Maine authors play in it. Maine has long been connected with some of the best in literature for children. Books such as Robert McCloskey's Blueberries for Sal, E.B. White's Charlotte's Web, and Barbara Cooney's Miss Rumphius are perennials on just about every list of the best children's books ever. That tradition continues. Today, still, many popular and well-respected children's book authors and illustrators call Maine home. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll meet two of those authors and a children's book editor based in Maine. We'll learn about trends in children's literature, the role of books for young readers, how the authors approach each book, and maybe even get a few tips for aspiring children's book authors and editors. What's your favorite children's book and why? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. For producing great reads for little ones, and we'll answer your questions on today's Maine Calling. Joining me from our studio, Sharon Creech. She writes children's novels and has won both the American Newbery Medal and the British Carnegie Medal. Her new book, Moo, is about a family that moves to Maine and a bond between a girl and an ornery cow. And that's out just next week, right,
Sharon? That's right.
Exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Smith is here. She's a children's and teen editor at Kirkus Reviews. And Chris Van Dusen is a children's book author and illustrator. His titles include If I Built a Car and the picture book The Circus Ship. He also illustrated Kate DiCamillo's story, Are You Going, Baby Lincoln? As always, we want to hear from you. What children's book made a mark on you or your kids? Have you ever wanted to write a book for young readers? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to all of you. Sharon and Chris, I want to start with you two and ask you how you became children's book authors. Sharon, is it part of it being part of a big family and rambunctious brothers?
Perhaps. I came in kind of the side door in the children's book world. I was living in England at the time, teaching English. So I had taught a lot of really great books and read a lot of great books as an English major. And there came a point sort of 15 years into that where all of those words, those amazing words and stories came tumbling out the other way. And so I started writing adult novels. I wrote two. And then the third one I wrote was Walk to Moons. And my British agent said, I think that's a children's book. And I said, well, okay, that's fine. And so that was published, and that won the Newbery, which opened this whole golden door into the world of children's books. So that's how I entered the children's book world.
When you wrote it, you didn't write it intending it to be a children's book. How come your editor thought it would be a children's book?
It was the agent first, because it had a 12-year-old narrator. So I really didn't know much about children's books. I was teaching Shakespeare, Chaucer, Fitzgerald, Hemingway. But the story that came out after I'd written two adult books was in this younger voice. I was missing my family back in the States, so I thought, well, I'll go back to when I was young and what it was like growing up in that family, and that was a 12-year-old voice. So I wrote that book the same way I wrote the adult books, and it was the agent first who said, let's try it as a children's book, and I guess it worked pretty well.
Are most of your books chapter books?
Yes, they are, most of them.
And Chris, most of your books, or the ones I've seen and are familiar with, are illustrated books, not chapter books, but maybe for the younger set.
Right. Picture books.
Yeah. How did you get started? Did you always know that you were going to do this?
No, I didn't know I was going to do children's books. I was an illustrator before I started writing, and so I always knew I was going to do something with art. But I actually sort of came late to the game. My first book was published when I was 40, so I'm kind of like the old man of picture books now. But I was doing a lot of editorial illustration for magazines, and while I was working on a project one day, this image of a man stuck in his boat high up in a tree with his dog sort of popped in my head, and I sketched it out on a little scrap of paper and set it aside, and I kept looking at it, and I thought, well, why did I draw that? Why did that image pop in my head? And how did that man get there and how is he going to get out of that tree? And that really became the basis for my first book, Down to the Sea with Mr. McGee.
And you know, it's funny meeting you, Chris. I have Down to the Sea with Mr. McGee at home, and I sort of thought you might look like Mr. McGee, but you don't really. Who is Mr. McGee? Is this a neighbor or a relative of yours?
Well, my wife, Lori, is convinced that it's my oldest brother, Glenn. I found out that people started calling my brother Mr. McGee at his office, so I guess they must have agreed. But no, it's just a made-up. It's just a made-up person.
Oh, yeah. That's funny. Vicki, what makes a good children's book?
I think the most important thing is respect for the child who's going to be reading it. A lot of would-be children's books that just don't make it are ones that are talking down to kids. It's not so much that a children's book shouldn't have a lesson, because a lot of fabulous children's books do have lessons, but the lessons need to be organic to the story. They can't be thumped down in front of the kid. So understanding both that children deserve rich literature and that they're almost always capable of understanding more than we adults give them credit for. I think that those are the most important things about a great children's book.
And we're sort of going through a renaissance in children's literature, aren't we? How many books arrive on your doorstep every month?
I can't possibly say, but I do review somewhere in the vicinity of 3,400 books a year.
3,400 books a year.
Well, not personally, but me and my staff, yes.
Yeah, okay. That's a lot.
It is.
Are they better than ever?
I think that in picture books and in children's books, the age that Sharon writes for, they are just incredible. I think that books for teenagers, there's some truly amazing books for teenagers, but there's also been a trend where publishers are hoping to grab middle-aged women with teenage books, and those I find are not quite so successful. They're very ephemeral and opportunistic. But for the ages that Chris and Sharon are creating for, yeah, it's a great time.
Sharon, who are your heroes?
Millions. Let's see. In the children's book world?
Yes.
All right. People like Jackie Woodson. She has a new book out I haven't read yet, Brooklyn, but
no,
Brown Girl Dreaming was just
fantastic
brilliant.
Book.
Virginia Ewer Wolf, one of my most favorite books of hers is True Believer. E.B. White, of course. Sandra Cisneros, who also has a new memoir out, but her book House on Mango Street really has stuck with me. I keep that by my bed and look at it every now and then. People like Lois Lowry, another main author, Karen Hess, Catherine Patterson, Pam Munoz Ryan. I could go on. But pretty much most of the Newbery authors, I have already picked up on them and read their books. They're pretty solid, that list, and the honor books. But beyond that, too, there are a lot of really good writers.
Chris, what about you? Who are your heroes, children's book illustrators and authors?
When I'm asked that, I always go back to two that I grew up with. Of course, Robert McCloskey was a huge influence and still is a huge influence on me. I was laughing with Sharon earlier. I said I brought my own copy of One Morning in Maine, more probably as a security blanket more than anything else, you know. I could just get lost in those illustrations. It was he created worlds where you wanted to be. You wanted to be on that island with Sal and Jane and go off to Bucks Harbor and get ice cream and just the worlds he created in those illustrations were amazing. And probably for writing, Dr. Seuss. I know that sounds sort of cliche, but just the way he writes, it's so musical and so rhythmic and, especially the rhyme, obviously. But he just created these incredible stories using these beautifully constructed lines. And they're so well done, they almost don't notice how cleverly they're crafted, you know, right. Because they're so easy to read. You don't get hung up on them. You know, rhyme is kind of a tricky thing. I write a lot of my books are in rhyme as well. And if it's done right, it's almost like you don't even notice it, you know, because it just, you don't get hung up on it. But if it's off, it's just like the worst thing. It's so painful. It's so painful to read bad rhyme.
Well,
probably know that, Vicki, right?
Yeah. Well, and you know, I was thinking about that. Anybody who's done any kind of writing knows that the hardest writing is the simple writing that seems simple. And there's nothing, at least on its surface, simpler than the Dr. Seuss books. But right. So any of us who's tried to write knows that that's probably the hardest of all. Vicki, I'm curious what you think about why some books transcend generations. You know, Chris was just mentioning not only Dr. Seuss, but Robert McCloskey. I'm thinking of books, Curious George, Ferdinand the Bull. Some of these early books really span generations. And then some, you go back and you look at some of the things from your own childhood and you think, oh, gosh, is that terrible today? What's the difference? Why do some books last?
Well, you know, I think it probably goes back to my first answer is this person who is in touch with children and where children are. I mean, the story of Ferdinand is a book that will never grow old. It will never seem out of date, even though it's, you know, it was published, what, 60 years ago now? I think that the books that do transcend generations are the ones that we love most, because those are the ones that we want to share with our own children and grandchildren. And the ones that we go back to and say, ugh, these aren't as good as I remembered, are probably not the ones that we've been most looking forward to sharing. So I don't know what it is. It's a magic. But the ones that stick with you are the ones that you're going to want to pass on.
Okay. And my question, too, so I want to talk about for just a moment Good Night, Moon, because both of my kids were obsessed with that book when they were a child. Why is Good Night, Moon the book that millions of children have to come back to again and again and again? Deconstruct this for us. Chris, you write rhyming, brightly colored, illustrated children's books.
Well, you know, it's funny because my kids love Good Night, Moon, too. I'm coming at this as from an illustrator's point of view. I think it's, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's more the writing. It's the soothing words that kids are drawn to. Because if you really look at the illustrations, and no offense, they're not great. I mean, they're okay, but they're not spectacular. Oh my gosh! I just
you're in trouble now.
But I'm curious. I have a box full of beautiful children's books I've saved from my children's. They're teenagers now, but I've saved and when I put Goodnight Moon in a box, I think I'm putting this in a box with all these other beautiful books. Why is it this one that children are so transfixed on?
I think, like I said, I think it's this. It's the rhythm of the words is so well done. It's so soothing. It's almost like a lullaby, really. Mm. You know, the way it's written, and it's so comforting. It's so soothing.
Right. It's the repetitive sounds.
Yeah.
And they're all smooth, soothing sounds. They're not harsh sounds.
Right.
And it's just, as you say, it's almost hypnotic.
Yeah.
A lullaby. Go to sleep now in the great green room.
Right.
I think also the fact that the child is enumerating everything that's in his world,
yes,
and making sure that everything is in its place, including the old lady whispering hush. I think that whole sense of it's time for me to go to bed and everything is where it belongs and I know where everything is, that in addition to the rhythm and those long soothing sounds, that really is very it's resonant for a kid.
We're talking about children's books on Maine Calling. If you'd like to call in, our phone number 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Maybe you're a big fan of Sharon Creech's or Chris Van Dusen's. Here's your chance to ask them a question about one of their books or to tell us about a children's book that you believe has been overlooked but that you really love. Give us a call, send us an email at talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Vicki, why are so many children's books the protagonist represented by an animal? And this has been this way for a lot of years. What's the reason for that?
Oh, boy. I think that there are lots of reasons. I think that one thing that the animal does is it allows an author or an illustrator to write about an adult character who is that the child is able to relate to the character because it's an animal, where they wouldn't necessarily relate to a full-grown human being. But oftentimes, if you look at those animal characters, they are living adult lives. They're living on their own. They don't have parents. I mean, a lot of them do have parents. But, you know, think about Frog and Toad. Frog and Toad are grown-ups. Mm-hmm. And giving the child the adult character in the form of an animal allows the child to jump over that sort of experiential and generational span and identify with the character a little bit better.
Okay, you guys have thoughts on that?
Same thing with Wind in the Willows, you know. They're even called Mr. Toad, and you know, but they have they're definitely given sort of an adult persona. So I think you're exactly right, Vicky.
And I'd also always wondered, is it a way of, you know, if you have a blonde-haired boy, well, then maybe a redheaded girl doesn't relate to that character. But if it's an animal, a child can transfer their identification.
I think that's true. I think kids can relate to animals, and they can put their own personalities into them. But it's funny you mentioned that boy-girl thing. One thing I heard when I first started out, and it always sort of scared me a little bit, was someone told me once that girls will read books where boys are the main characters, but boys won't read books where girls are the main characters.
I've heard that about movies, children's movies.
Yeah. So that's why up to this point, I've always had male characters, although I have a book coming out with a female character.
Ooh, tell us about it.
It's coming out next May. It's a picture book that I wrote and illustrated. It's called Hattie and Hudson. Hattie's the main character. She's like a 12-year-old, 10-year-old girl. And she meets another character named Hudson, who I'm not going to really give away, but I think boys will relate to Hudson, and I think girls will relate to Hattie. So, and it's non-rhyming. It's my first non-rhyming book, too.
Oh, boy. So, is that scary?
It was really hard. It was really hard because you sort of lose the structure of the rhyme. I mean, when I'm writing a rhyming book, I know that I can have maybe the maximum two stanzas on this spread. And so I'm sort of dictated by the structure of the rhyme. But when you're all of a sudden given all the words in the world and all, it was really, really tough. I went through like 9 rewrites on that story before I got it right.
Both you, Chris, and you, Sharon, are very prolific. How do you come up with your ideas? Do you always have tons of ideas and it's just a matter of which one am I going to grab next or not so much?
Shall I go?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I don't have tons of ideas. It's always one idea at a time. And once something gets a hold of me, for instance, maybe I want to write about this girl and a cow and how they affect each other, or a family and an old woman, that's just where I start. And I go from there, and I don't work on anything else while I'm working on that. But almost always, by the time I finish that book, something else is percolating. There's something else that's brewing that I know when I stop this book, when I finish it, I'm going to launch into this other idea and just follow that wherever it goes. Do you, Chris, have
It's cooking. It's always cooking, right?
Yes,
it's always cooking. It's always composting back there.
it's cooking.
Do you have a lot at the same time? Are a lot of things pulling
No, but
at you?
They pop into my head at the weirdest times. So, you know, I'll wake up early one morning and, like 5 o'clock in the morning, and an idea will pop into my head and I'll jot it down. So yeah, I never really know when they're going to come. I mean, if I actually go and sit down at my drawing table and try to write, I just get nothing. It's like when I'm driving in the car or mowing the lawn or in the shower, that's when an idea will pop into your head.
I've heard that from adult fiction writers as well, so it must be a universal theme. We have to take a break. We're talking about children's books. We'd love for you to join the conversation. 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Snow Pond Center for the Arts, presenting December 63, the Frankie Valli and Four Seasons Tribute, August 25th. Tickets at snowpond.org.
On the next Radio Lab.
Ooh. Explosion.
Automatic weapons.
Who do we want to shoot? Lots of people. When do we want to shoot them?
Yesterday.
What's the face that you see when you picture a terrorist?
Those two young boys. Cute little young innocent looking boys.
And what if you're wrong?
What I saw does not make sense.
It's a gut thing.
That's on the next Radio Lab.
Do you feel any safer?
Join us tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock and again for the rebroadcast Tuesday evening at 11. Sports teams are well established at high schools around Maine, but what about academic teams? Maine Public Television's new high school quiz show gets underway this coming school year, a high school quiz show similar to the Granite State Challenge in New Hampshire and WGBH Boston's high school quiz show. Teams from around Maine will represent their schools and compete against each other. Are you a superintendent, principal, teacher, parent, or student who is interested? We are looking for teams to compete in our first year and have complete information, what's involved, the schedule, how to register at mpbn.net.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, The Wonderful World of Children's Books. With me in our studio, Vicki Smith. She's an editor of children's and teen books at Kirkus Reviews.
Book reviews.
Book reviews. Okay, great. Thanks. Chris Van Dusen is a children's book author and illustrator, and Sharon Creech writes children's books as well, has a brand new book coming out next week called Moo. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We already have two recommendations from Brian. My daughter, who just turned four, loves Stella Luna. It's about a bat who is separated from her mother and grows up with birds, then finds her mother at the end. It's a sweet story and her favorite. Leah on Facebook, our current favorite is Daydreamers by Emily Winfield Martin. So thanks for that for both of you. Before we get to the calls, though, I want to ask you, Vicki, about a movement that the hashtag We Need Diverse Books. It started a couple years ago. Why don't you tell me about that?
Well, it's sort of the culmination of 50 years of frustration and before that decades of complete denial that there were children of color in the United States. In 1965, a poet named Nancy Lyric wrote a groundbreaking article. It was published in the Saturday Review. It was called The All-White World of Children's Books. And she observed that almost all books being published for children in the United States featured white children. And she was deeply concerned that white children would grow up without any contact with children, you know, children who looked other than them, and also that children of color would never see themselves reflected in books and that their own experience would be essentially erased. And for decades, it's been percolating in the industry. We need more creators of color. We need more books with characters of color and other types of diversity. But somehow that all came to a head a couple of years ago. I think Walter Dean Myers and Chris Myers, who, well, Walter Dean Myers is now dead, but he was a great African-American writer of books for teenagers and children. And his son, Chris, is an illustrator and also an author of picture books. They wrote a couple of essays in the New York Times about what it's like growing up without any reflections in the literature, seeing nothing but white children and how that denies their own personhood. And following that, the We Need Diverse Books hashtag emerged, and now it's actually an organization with a budget and officers. And they've been working, and also people in the industry have been working to promote books that have kids in them who represent America. Because in America, in very little time, children under the age of 18 will be majority-minority. Preschoolers already are. Children in public schools already are. So when the industry continues to publish books with nothing but white children in them, it's denying America as we know it. And you talked about racism on Wednesday. Maine children growing up in the, you know, the whitest state in the union who don't see the experiences of children of color, they don't see them next door because there aren't that many, they can see them in books. And that's going to make a more just society.
All right. We're going to go to Mary Beth, who's calling from Calais. Hi, Mary Beth. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Nice to hear you all. I'm so excited to actually be calling. I just want to say to Chris that your books are amazing. I didn't know if my son was going to like The Circus Ship, but he does. And he goes to it night after night.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly bought it at Barnes & Noble and wasn't sure if he was going to like the book, but he actually does, and we both enjoy reading it night after night, and he just loves the animals in it. And Sharon, I haven't read any of your books, but I plan on going to see where I can buy them after this.
Mary Beth, how old is your child?
Noah is four.
Okay. And Sharon, what age group would you recommend your books for?
They're for older age groups, say.
Oh, they are.
But wait, there are.
Oh, okay.
I did do three picture books, and I would recommend A Fine, Fine School. That's very popular with young kids. And Fishing in the Air.
Oh, great.
Those are two picture books that I did.
All right. Thanks for calling, Mary Beth.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Moving to Marilyn, who's calling from Bristol. Hi, Marilyn. Go ahead.
Hi there. How are you?
Great.
I'm also thinking of The Snowy Day. Does anybody remember?
Yes.
That?
Yeah. Snowy Day and Corduroy. The boy is African American, isn't he?
Oh, no.
Yeah. Lisa, girl. Yes, but she is
the girl. That's right. The girl. Yeah. I'm
It's been a few years.
Yeah, it has. But yeah, those were exceptions.
Those were exceptions
at the time. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Marilyn.
About a year old, I think. In view of the extreme popularity, isn't quite the word, well-reviewed The Underground Railroad, the current new adult book. I have one I know of for middle school age, Running Out of Night, N-I-G-H-T, by Sharon Lovejoy, who is a summer resident in Maine. And this is the story in Virginia of two little girls on the run from slave catchers. Mm. One is Zenobia. She's black. And Lark, she meets, is a white girl, and she is an abused white child. And they're on the run together from slave catchers. And it's a wonderful short novel, I repeat, for the middle school age group.
Well, Marilyn, thanks for your recommendation. I'm going to repeat it. Tell me if I've got this right. Running Out of Night,
exactly,
by Sharon Lovejoy.
Exactly. Short novel for middle school age kids.
All right. Thanks for your call. We're going to go to Falmouth and Kim. Hi, Kim. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Yes. First of all, I just want to thank both authors. Your books have blessed our family, and we love them. So thank you for putting your work out there for
thank
us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. I was wondering, I'm thinking especially of the circus ship. There's moments in there that I knew I picked up on, but my kids didn't necessarily. And I kind of think of that almost like a Pixar film where there's always, you know, just a little nuggets in there for grown-ups too that aren't above kids' heads, but at the same time, it's really more for the grown-ups. So I was wondering if when you're writing, do you write for an audience of the parents as well, or who's going to be reading the book to the child, or are you simply thinking of the child?
I never write, like Vicki alluded to earlier, I never write down to kids. I learned that right at the get-go, that if you dumb it down, you actually insult the kids and you lose the reader. So I always try to throw challenge words in there. I mean, there's some big words in there, and there's, since the story takes place back in the 1800s, there's words like pray tell, which nobody uses nowadays, and menagerie. I had a funny story. I met a father at a book signing, and he said, thanks for increasing my kids' vocabulary. And I said, well, what do you mean by that? And he said, well, they have the circus ship, and he came down to breakfast the other day, and he was pretending to be a waiter. I think this is how I got it right. He said he was pretending to be a waiter, and he went up to the table where his dad was sitting. He said, "What we today we're having a menagerie of foods." So it was a little off, but it was cute that he was attempting to use the words. But I never talked down to him, and as a result, there's humor and there's writing in there that appeals to adults as well. The circus ship. I think that of all my books, that's probably my most popular, and that's the one that works best on a lot of different levels because the earlier caller had a four-year-old, and they may not necessarily get the whole story of community and friendship, but, you know, kids love circus animals. Kids love animals, so the really young kids are relating to animals, and the older kids pick up on that message of, protecting and a community and friendship, like I mentioned, but it also has all sorts of elements, as well as, like, there's some scary parts, there's some funny parts, there's some, you know, sort of suspenseful parts, and then of course there's that big picture at the end where all the kids have to find all the 15 animals, which is kind of a game within the book, but it turned out to be that's the most popular page in that book.
So many successful children's books are funny. And I'm wondering if you all are trying for punchlines when you're writing. Are you looking for moments to make your audience laugh out loud? Or
I'm not. But I think that that kind of humor comes out of who you are. So, for instance, I tend to be drawn to the serious, in the universal kind of questions, but part of my personality is you can only be serious for so long and then you have to lighten it up. So almost always there'll be a scene that's straight, serious, maybe not necessarily sober, but, you know, straight. And then someone will do something to lighten it up, that sort of comic relief kind of thing that you see in the theater. And again, I think that just comes naturally. It's not something I'm trying to do. However, it's one of the things that I've discovered children love about a lot of the stories is, oh, that was such a sad part about the dog. But then when Walter Dean Myers came to his class, you know, that was so funny. You know, they loved that they weren't left down in the dumps, that they were brought back out with a little bit of hope, a little bit of laughter.
Right, and that mix, I think, is important, too, to have the mix of all the different emotions. I think that's what makes a successful book.
You were alluding to film a little bit or theater. Do authors or illustrators or publishers ever do sort of focus groups before they bring them? Do you ever get together some kids and show them the book and see if they laugh where you hope they laugh? And no?
that happened to me once, actually. I was offered a manuscript to illustrate, and I wasn't really sure. I was sort of on the fence of it, on it. And so I gathered little kids in the neighborhood, and I sat on my front porch. I said, I don't have any pictures to show you, but I want to read a story and see if you like it. And I read the story, and they were kind of went, eh. And the oldest one was really cute. She was my neighbor. She said, well, if you illustrate, I'd probably buy it. But other than that, I didn't pay her off to say that. It was, yeah.
That's cute. So informal. We're going to go to Laura, who's calling from Lewiston. Hi, Laura. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. I wanted to just talk a little bit about gender roles. I have a young son, and it breaks my heart when I hear the fact that boys tend not to read books with girls as the main characters. Because I think that's just so symbolic of such a bigger problem in our society where, like, girls are valued less than boys. And also boys are not allowed, quote unquote, to do things that girls like to do. So I'm looking for, I have one recommendation, but I also am looking for more recommendations for maybe books that do include girls as main characters that boys would totally be interested in, or like that parents could be more proactive in including, or non-normative books where, like, boys like enjoy doing things like cooking or, you know, making things or sewing or doing things that are traditionally thought of as girl things, even though that's, you know, kind of old-fashioned thinking.
Sure. Laura, why don't you give us your recommendation, then I'll ask Vicki if she has any. Go ahead, Laura.
Sure, yeah. So my recommendation is actually this really amazing comic book series called The Lumberjanes. It's great for, I'd say, I mean, any age between like 5 and 13. It's a group of scrappy, super different, fun girls who are kind of like Girl Scouts, and they have all these adventures with supernatural encounters in the woods. And it's like a comic book, but it's bright and colorful, and you could totally, like, boys and girls would be really into it. So that's my recommendation.
Okay, great, Laura. Vicki, you have any other ideas for Laura?
You know, the universe of books that would do that is large, and I'm having a hard time coming up with specific titles. There's one question you wanted was, you know, books that question traditional gender roles, and a terrific picture book that came out a few years ago is called Morris Micklewhite and the Tangerine Dress, and it's about a boy who just likes to wear a dress, and it's just out there. It doesn't have a conclusion. So, I mean, it doesn't say this is what's wrong with Morris or what's right with Morris. It's just about Morris and how he likes to wear this tangerine dress, which got me thinking about more and more books are seeking to sort of provide windows and mirrors for transgender kids. And a terrific one that came out last year is called George by Alex Gino. And it's about a child who was born a biological boy, but she really knows that her name is Melissa and that she's a girl. It's a wonderful book. I really encourage everybody to check that one out.
Oh, good. Thanks, Laura, for your call. We have some great emails here and Facebook posts. From Facebook, Karen, I've always loved Harold and the Purple Crayon books. And Kevin, is it Hank's or Hanky's books are wonderful, too. An email from Jeff. As a carpenter, I did some work for Lynn Cherry when she lived in Connecticut. She's a wonderful author and illustrator. My children loved her books, and now my grandchildren do. And Leah on Facebook, the books of William Steig or William Steig?
Steig.
Steig. Dr. DeSoto, Sylvester and the Magic Pebble, and Shrek are not only wonderful stories, but have fabulous language. Also, the picture books by Bill Peet are timeless and beautifully illustrated. So there's some more recommendations. Going to Anne, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Anne. Go ahead.
Hi there. I wanted to talk a little bit about the older children
and the amazing books that Phil Holmes from Portland has written, in particular the one called Twice Toward Justice, which is the Claudette Colvin story. She was actually the first young woman who sat on a bus in Mississippi. And these are true stories. He also did one that's the boys who challenged Hitler.
Right.
And this is a real story. These are amazing and extraordinary for kids who are in, I would think, from fifth to sixth grade up.
Absolutely. They're great books.
They are great books. And Phil seems to find these stories that are just fascinating. You can't imagine that somebody hasn't written about him before. He just finds these incredible gems, and he does an incredible job.
He's got a couple of...
My feeling when I read them, how come I never knew this?
He's got a couple of books that came out before Claudette Colvin that pull together a lot of stories that are like that. How did we not know? And one is called... We Were There Too, and it's about kids in U.S. history, and it's just got a lot of different stories, and that's actually how he found Claudette Colvin, was researching that book. And then another one called It's Our World Too, which looks at kids sort of taking part in making their world a better place around the world. They're both fabulous.
Well, Anne, thanks so much for calling and mentioning Phil Hose's name on Maine Calling today. We do have to take another short break. When we return, more comments and questions. Please stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Silly's and Silly's with a Twist in Portland's East End. Open at 11 Wednesday through Friday, 9 on the weekends, with vegan and gluten-free options. Silly's.com.
The thawing of the frozen earth could cook the planet.
Our current estimate is that there's about 1,500 billion tons of carbon in permafrost. If all of the carbon in permafrost was released into the atmosphere, at that point, this is not going to be a habitable planet for humans.
We might need a new ice age to save us. I'm Steve Kerwood, and that's next time on Living on Earth from PRI.
Join us for Living on Earth coming up Sunday morning at 7 o'clock. And ahead in about 20 minutes in our 2 o'clock Public Affairs Hour, join us for the second hour of the Diane Rehm Show, the International Week in Review, coming up here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling today on the program, The Rich Environment of Children's Literature. Joining me today, Chris Van Dusen writes and illustrates children's books. Sharon Crete writes children's novels. Vicki Smith works at Kirkus Reviews. As an editor, join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Going to go to Susan, who's calling from Goldsboro. Hi, Susan.
Hi there. I had a question for the panel. I am just getting started in writing kids' books. I'm primarily interested in kids' biography. And I was wondering if the panel had anything to say to people who were getting started writing or illustrating kids' books.
Sure. I can recommend an organization. I think we can all recommend an organization that might be really helpful. It's called the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, SCBWI. Their website is scbwi.org. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is that right?
I think that's right.
We can put it on our Facebook page, too. Yeah.
And they are a nationwide organization that really helps, especially first-time writers, I think. I think they're really helpful. They hold conferences and meetings around the country. I believe there's a Northeast chapter. When people ask me this question, I often point them in that direction. I think that's a good way to start. Another thing that I would recommend is, do you know those market books that you see, like the writer's market or the photographer's market? A lot of times they have them in libraries. And there's one, I think it's called the Children's Book Writers and Illustrators Market. And those books used to be not all that helpful, but I think they've come a long way. And recently there's much more information there that is really good for first-time writers. Things about, like, how to get an agent. Do I need an agent? What publishers should I send my story to? What publishers are looking for? So I think those are two good places to start.
I think also spending a lot of time in your local library's children's room and just seeing everything that's out there so that you get a sense of what makes a great children's book. Richard Peck, who has been writing for decades, says nobody ever became a writer who wasn't a reader. And so reading lots and lots and lots of books, specifically children's books of the sort that you want to get into, will help you understand how they're structured, how they're paced, what a kid's voice sounds like. That can be a huge help.
There's one more tip that might help. There's a writer here in Maine, a very prolific writer named Lynn Plord, and she has a terrific website. It's lynnplord.com, and that's lynnplorde.com. If you go to her website, and I hope she doesn't mind me recommending this, I don't think she will, she's got a Q&A section that has a lot of information about getting a book published, and I think that's a really good resource as well.
I'd like to just jump in and say a lot of authors have blogs that are helpful like that and have frequently asked questions on the blog. That's good. Another thing, you just mentioned Lynn Plord. She has a new book out called Maxie's Secret, which is appropriate to mention today because it's National Dog Day.
Oh,
yes.
Happy National Dog
that's
Day.
Right. Barbara O'Connor is not a Maine writer, but she also has a dog book called Wish that's about to come out. I would look forward to that. But you mentioned SEBWI, and that I wanted to add that they also do conferences in addition to providing online information and a magazine. They have a conference that is done regionally, so there's more than one. I've heard so many people say that they've met editors and agents there. They got the greatest tips. That's really good. Also, Highlights for Children runs a really good series of conferences, and they're located, I think, in Honesdale, Pennsylvania. I actually went to one in, like, 1989 after I'd written I was writing a draft of Walk Two Moons, and it was when my agent said, I think it's a children's book, and I was happened to be living in the town, Chautauqua, New York, where Highlights was running its conference then. And I went there just to find out, well, what is a children's book and how is it different from an adult book? So that was, there I met Lois Lowry, actually. So there are things like that where if you have an opportunity to go hear a writer or an editor or an agent or a librarian or a reviewer, you will get so much help.
Absolutely.
From any of them.
It's interesting hearing you talk and recommending Lynn Plord's website. And I'm wondering if children's book authors, because we have so many in Maine and so many really wonderful children's book authors, do you all know each other? Do you talk? Do you support each other? Is this a community?
We do know each other. I mean, we used to have these big group signings, which was fun, down in Portland. We haven't done that recently. But we're all sort of tucked away in our back rooms doing our stuff. So, you know, a lot of times, I know about these people, but I haven't talked to them for a while.
Well, I'm recently moved to Maine, so I've only been here 4 years. But I was struck in that first year, I found out that, oh, Chris Van Dusen lives a mile away from me. Oh, Melissa Sweet, she lives
right.
another mile. And then Liza Gardner-Wall, she's another Maine writer who does the fairy books. I just thought we were teeming with children's book people, illustrators and writers. And as Chris says, we don't do these big get-togethers. It's so nice. I've been walking down the street and seeing Chris walking his dog, and so we exchanged two minutes of book conversation. But it's just nice knowing that there are other people out there. Okay, yes, we're tucked away writing our books or illustrating our books, but it's a really supportive community, really happy, positive group.
I agree.
Kindred spirits. I'm going to move on. I'm going to go to Brett, who's calling from Sanford. Hi, Brett. Go ahead.
How's it going today? Thanks for taking my call. We're very excited to hear Chris on the radio right now. I'm driving with my niece, who's 12, and who remembers, she thinks you went to her school in Blue Hill when she was in kindergarten or first grade.
Yes.
Shared about your book, The Circus Ship.
Yeah.
And I read that book very, very frequently to my boys, who are 6 and 3. And I love, as you were saying earlier, kind of the ease of reading with the rhyming in your book. And I had a book last night that I was reading to my 3-year-old, but some of it rhymed and some of it didn't, and it drove me crazy. And I'm not going to tell you what book it was, but there's nothing more painful when he's like, this is the book I want to read. You know, there are nights where, as a parent, you're like, oh, you're so sure that's the one you want to read. But yours, whenever my kids brought yours, I love it. I love it, and I thank you so much.
Thank you so much. That really is very nice.
It's so, my kids love finding the animals, you know, that are hiding on the island.
Yeah, it's hard to get kids to go to sleep, though, when they have to, when you get to that page, because that's a good 15 minutes right there. Yeah.
Yeah, when I want them to go to bed, it's good night news. But when I have an enjoyable end of day experience, it's one of your books. Or the other books that I really love are Skippy John Jones, because there are fun voices we get to do with Skippy John Jones that they love.
Great language in those books. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Brett,
yeah.
Thanks for your call. We're going to move on. We're going to go to Walpole and Laura. Hi, Laura. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for this show. You got my imagination going. My juices are flowing. I just wanted to suggest a book that I really loved called A Child's Garden of Verses.
Oh, yeah, that's a brand new book, isn't
Robert
it?
Robert Louis Stevenson.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of a child of books.
Been suggested? I'm sorry, I might have missed part of it. But
I thought you were joking because it's so old.
I know. No, there's a brand new book called A Child of Books that I was confusing with. I'm sorry about that.
No, that's okay. But the illustrations by Brian Wildsmith is what really just captivated me as a kid. And still, I still have that book, and I love it.
Mm.
And I don't have any kids of my own, but I have a goddaughter, and she's about to have a baby, and I was very active when she was young. But the other thing I want to suggest is I don't think I've heard Little Bear yet.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Little Bear's wonderful.
And I also wanted to say The Family of Woman and The Family of Man, which are really photo books, black and white photo books, they have very little words in them, some, you know, verses and quotes and stuff, but just that kind of thing, like more of an adult aspect, I guess, but, you know, showing the black and white, like the real world to kids is the other thing I thought of.
Laura, thanks for your call. We're going to go down the coast just a little bit to Newcastle and Pauline. Hi, Pauline. Go ahead.
Hi. First of all, I want to thank everybody for being on the show. It's just amazing. I love hearing you talk about books and writing and everything. And I would just like to encourage people who write to put their books on audio tape, on the audio version. I've been doing this, offering this to my children and my grandchildren for years, and it's an amazing, amazing tool for children to increase their vocabulary. They listen to it. You listen to them in the car or at bedtime and over and over and over again. It's a great, great reading builder. We don't always have time to read to our children as much as we want, but I absolutely love it. And funny books, Flora and Ulysses by Kate DeCamillo, one of my favorites to read aloud. My granddaughter just absolutely loved it.
Great.
Thank you all.
Yeah, Sharon, are your books on audio book?
Yes, that's mostly up to the publisher. It's not up to me, but the publisher, HarperCollins, I think has done all my books on audio, and a lot of them are now on the e-books as well. Yes, I agree with you too, though. I've recently been listening to some children's books on tape as I'm driving around doing errands, and I have some of the old Dick King Smith ones, a British writer. They're just hilarious ones about kids and animals, or really world of animals. And that tied in well while I was writing Moo, which is the new book. It tied in well. I was getting this sort of feel of the barnyard through these books. There's some really good ones. This, the one I liked most was called Trific. It's spelled T-R-R-F-I-C. Leaves out the E, but it's about it.
Yeah, and it's great when they're great actors do it. We did. We listened to some of the Lemony Snicket books when my kids were younger, and I can't remember off the top of my head who was reading it, but was just did all these voices and was so fun.
Yeah,
yeah. Thanks so much for your call, Pauline. And I think we have room for one more, so go ahead, Veronique and Gardner.
Hello. Thank you so much for taking my call, and thank you to all of you for coming to the show, Chris. You are the best author that my kids have ever read. They love your books so much.
Thank you.
And everybody is talking about the circus ship, but we have read all of them. And our favorite character is Mr. McGee, and we noticed that he hides in all the other books.
Yes.
And so I just wanted to know, I don't know if somebody has already asked you about that, but if you could tell us a little bit more about how, why you created Mr. McGee and why do you hide him in all the other books?
Yeah, thanks for the question. And I'm really glad you like the books. Yeah, I put Mr. McGee, he was the subject of my first two books, Down to the Sea and A Camping Spree with Mr. McGee. But when it came to time to do my third book, which was called If I Built a Car, I had one picture in the book where this dream car is zipping across a lake. And it looks like it's just about to collide with a guy fishing in a boat. And I had sketched that picture out and with just a sort of a normal guy and his dog fishing. And I thought, oh, wouldn't that be fun to put Mr. McGee in there? And then kids who know the previous books could find him. And so I just sort of stuck him in there. And I checked my agent first to make sure that was legally right, if that was okay. And she said, yeah. So I put him in there. And so many kids had fun finding Mr. McGee in that book that I decided to put him in all my books. And he shows up, you know, in little spots here and there. And it's just kind of like this hide and seek thing that I put in there for the kids to discover.
Oh, Veronique, thanks for your call. I'm going to try to squeeze in one more call from Carrie in Portland. Carrie, we just have a little bit of time left. So if you can be quick, I'd be really happy.
Sure. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say to Sharon Creech that I'm a teacher in first and second grade in Portland, and I read Love That Dog and Fine Fine School with my kids last year. And I really appreciated Love That Dog and how it helped the kids to really grapple with some difficult concepts. And like she said earlier in the show, sort of find some humor in it afterward and realize that this too shall pass. And I also wanted to just make a plug for another author illustrator that lives locally that does a really good job with diversity, and that's Anne Sibley O'Brien.
Yep.
She does a really good job to make sure that there are characters that are diverse but not necessarily pigeonholed into their specific racial issues.
Well, Carrie, thanks so much for calling, and I'm going to have to say goodbye to you because we're out of time, and I've got to thank our guests. Vicki tells me she came in with a list of some books to recommend, so we'll put this on our MPBN Main Calling Facebook page since we ran out of time, but I'll make sure and get those from her right away. Sharon Creech writes children's novels and has won both the American Newbery Medal and the British Carnegie Medal. Her new book is Moo, an uplifting story about a family that moves to Maine and an unexpected bond between a girl and an ornery cow. Vicki Smith is an editor at Kirkus Review. She's an expert in children's and teen books. And Chris Van Dusen, a children's book author and illustrator. Some of his titles, The Circus Ship and If I Built a Car. Jonathan Woodward ran the board today. Cindy Hahn answered your calls. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.